You're live.
We are recording. What's up, everybody? It is the Suits and Boots episode number 8, I believe it is, because somebody asked me right before this how many we have actually recorded.
Yeah, when I uploaded our last week's podcast, I had to go back and look at all the previous ones so that I could put the correct episode number on it.
Well, there wasn't that many to count because we took 3 months off.
That was 7. This is 8.
This is number 8. Okay, great. That's my lovely wife, Leslie. We are Suits and Boots. I said Leslie.
I said hello.
Oh, I thought you was criticizing me for the way I say Leslie.
No, I'll criticize you later.
Okay. I'm going to let you do the sponsors. But here's the thing. When you do the sponsors, you got to actually talk about what they do, not just name them.
I know what one does, okay, or two.
Go. Let's go.
All right. Thank you, sponsors. We have Bearded Mother Trucker. That's Brad Lesmeister. He does beard oil for your beard.
And he sells merchandise.
He does sell merchandise. Mm-hmm. Tattooed Brews.
What are they?
It's a bar.
And restaurant.
And restaurant. In Rock Hill. Downtown Rock Hill.
Okay.
Sign Techniques. Old TJ.
What do they do?
They make signs and stickers and banners and all fine
like
stuff.
Like the one behind you.
Spike's Skins and Nuts.
What's he do?
He makes boiled peanuts and pork rinds.
Pork skins.
Pork rinds.
Okay.
Same thing.
All right.
Hospitality, Heating and Air.
Yep. Mr. Gene Lucas.
Mm-hmm.
And what Comer do they do? Whoa. Don't be cheating. What do they do?
They do heating and air. It's okay. In the title of their company name.
I'm just making sure you know how to read.
I know how to read. Comer Distributing.
Who are they?
They are a beer distributor.
Mm-hmm.
360 Supply. Here at Get Dirty.
Yep.
It's a mulch yard, rock yard, buy your rock
supply
mulch.
Supply yard. Yep.
EA Sports Fields. Mm-hmm. They do AstroTurf.
Mm-hmm.
Firehouse Construction.
Mm-hmm.
And the company that I happen to work
what
for.
What is Firehouse Construction? See, this is why I dominate.
It's not supposed
this is why
to
I
take
talk.
So long to call out sponsors.
This is why I talk, because she can't, she don't do it right. What is Firehouse Construction?
Construction company.
By actual firemen. Okay. Next.
Controlled sites.
And what do they do? Y'all don't do anything. You ride around for 4 hours a day, 4 days a week, and you call it a job.
It is a job. It's a good
job.
Oh,
let me go read this rain gauge and see where it rained at this job site. Oh, my God, I got my boots muddy. And Tabitha pees in the back of horse trailers and gets chased by geese. That's y'all's job.
She attracts the wildlife.
All right, so that's our sponsors. As you know, we are a podcast about marriage.
Family.
Relationships, raising children, things like that. And we've got a couple special guests. We brought in today Mr. Matt Burrell from Liberty Church in York, South Carolina. He is our pastor. And originally his wife, Lynn, was coming. She got sick, so we had to go to the second string and bring in his daughter, Gracie. How's it feel to be the backup, Gracie?
It feels good. I would probably be the first choice, honestly.
Well, I threw it out there. I said, why don't you bring one of the kids? And he automatically, I'll bring Gracie.
Yep, the favorite one.
We're going to talk about that in a little bit. So, Matt, I'm going to let Matt and Gracie, I'm going to let y'all introduce yourselves and talk about your background and the church and stuff like that. I'll take it over.
Yeah, sure. Well, my name is Matt Burrell. Like he said, I'm the pastor of Liberty Church in York, South Carolina. And don't judge our church by our members, Dugan Meredith and Leslie.
At least I come. Leslie didn't come for a month because she was busy going to rodeos. What'd you say to me?
I don't remember. I just said I want to make sure that Leslie's okay. Anytime a spouse doesn't show up for a month, I want to make sure I don't need to send out a search party or something.
No, and I said we're still married.
Right.
I haven't killed her.
Good.
She's just at the rodeo.
But yeah, we're pastor there at Liberty Church in York, South Carolina, and been there. I guess this December will be 12 years. So that's what we do. Yeah.
Nice.
And I hate my wife's not feeling well, but I've got my daughter Gracie with us. Gracie, tell us about yourself.
Okay. My name is Gracie. Like they said, I am 21 years old. He said, you know, we've been doing this for about 12 years, so I was, you know, real young starting out. But even before that, we were traveling from different churches, you know, like all over, probably South Carolina, Georgia, a little bit. So I've kind of been used to it for quite a while, but it feels good to be in the same place for quite a while. We've got a good church family, so we're super, super thankful for it.
Good. And we're really excited that y'all are here. Really excited. Here on the podcast.
Yeah.
I do get to see you every Sunday.
Yeah.
Just for the record, Matt's a crier. Anybody that goes to our church knows that. And I'm not going to lie, Matt, I cry too.
Yeah. It's
like Sunday mornings, I cry. This past Sunday, when they were singing, I look over at you.
Yeah, if you're crying, everybody's bawling.
Bro, I look over at you because we're right across from where you stand while they're singing. And I'm trying. I'm like, I'm not going to cry. I look over at Matt Burrell, and I can see it. And you're bawling, and I can't control it. I dip my head.
Yeah.
And I get snot gets to running. Yep. I get to shaking.
Yeah. Hey, I don't know where it comes from. I just... I cry easy. My eyes leak. I don't know what's going on with me. But, yeah, I'm a crier. I can't help it.
You
got overactive tear ducts.
I do. That's exactly right.
And then you get up on stage and you say, my allergies are getting
better. Yeah. That's exactly right. That's my allergies.
Matt, you are a former police officer, correct?
That's right. Yep. Sure.
How long were you a police officer?
I was a police officer for 13 years, two of which, the last 2 years, I was bivocational with the church I'm in. So I was a pastor / police officer for two of those years. I'm 13 years police. So nice. I tell people I'm a police officer that become a preacher. That's kind of my bio. That's right. Who I am, you know.
And you get criticized at both jobs, right?
Yeah, you get it's a people it's a people business, no doubt about it. No doubt.
I would imagine the only other position or career right now where would probably get scrutinized more would be the president.
Oh, absolutely. I would say so.
Maybe one day you'll run?
No, never. Okay. No.
Gracie, I'm going to ask you a question. What's it like being a pastor's daughter?
Now that I'm older, it's really not that bad, but I think it was probably like the worst when I was in high school because, you know, if I'm like talking to a guy, clearly my parents know about it, but then other parents, you know, they'll message mom and dad like, oh, did you see Gracie was hanging out with this person? Like, they were always kind of just people in the church, people outside of the church, just always looking at me because, you know, I represent my parents. And now that I'm older, I do understand, like, you know, with your dad being a pastor, it's like you have to be on your best behavior. But a lot of times you don't want to be on your best behavior. You kind of want to do like whatever you want to do. So,
right.
You're
21.
Right.
I mean, you're your own person at this point.
Right.
Well, even at a young age at high school, people look at you as the pastor's daughter. You have to set a higher standard.
Right.
And you're not supposed to be a kid. You're not supposed to do the fun things because of that.
And it even like was little things like with me cheerleading in high school, people were coming to my parents, oh, y'all let her wear that short skirt to football games or y'all do this. And honestly, it's like, you know, they did really well about it, like not letting it affect them because we're their children. So they're the only ones that can tell us what we can and can't do. But I guess like the older you get, you know, it is like a blessing because you see what it's like to have like what you want out of your life.
Right.
Like who you want to be with, what kind of husband you should be with. I don't technically want to marry a pastor just because you see what they go through, but it is something to kind of look up to and see how it is to not only lead your family, but a large group of people.
Right.
Oh, come on now, Gracie. It's every girl's dream to marry a man just like their dad.
Oh, for sure. I'll do the like cop side of that. I'll marry
now, the cop part. Let me ask you a question, Gracie.
Yes.
If you were able to choose, what would you rather your dad do today, police officer or pastor?
Pastor, just because I know how much it means to him. And he'll even like admit when he quit policing. I remember he told us a story. He's like, yeah, you know, I went in, turned my stuff in. They let him keep his badge for like a shadow box. But he's like, I just went to my car and like cried.
Well, and so we already talked about that. Yeah.
So that part was really hard, just seeing how much he loved it. But now like, you know, 12 years later and seeing where everything's falling into place. And he's always told you, you know, God will provide. It doesn't matter like what you're doing, as long as you're doing what God wants you to do.
Right.
So I think he went from doing what he wanted to do to what God wanted him to do. So I wouldn't pick anything else for him.
Good. Good.
Well, the passion that he has.
Right. Yeah.
And the passion he has to bring people to Christ and lead his church is
Yeah, and I think it's definitely
satisfying to know that he chose that over.
Right, and I think it's definitely changed him too, like in the way he did everything, like just everything we've been through. You know, he's like, God's got this. God's doing this for us. He'll do this for us. You know, even
well, he's also a guy. Y'all women, y'all stress about stuff.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Like I have this conversation with her all the time.
Yeah,
and I'm like, honey, just chill.
Yeah,
it's not that big a deal. And I can see she wants to look at me and go, why are you not stressing about this? And it's because I have that faith and I'm a Christian that I know no matter what happens, God is in control and it's what he wants to happen.
Right. And it's like, he'll always talk about, you know, you should do this. You should read your Bible more. You should pray more. But it's not just stuff he's saying. Like when I was in college, you know, I would start getting up before everybody else going to school. And first thing I would do is go to the bathroom, brush my teeth, and I would hear him in there because he gets up early in the mornings. He'd be doing his Bible study and like praying for his family. And then you just see how it's outside of church. It's more important to him. So it's important to him in church, but then he's also living it outside of church.
Gotcha.
Yep.
Thank you. Matt, got a question for you.
Sure.
What's the best thing about being a pastor?
Well, I think it's the, I think it kind of goes back kind of what Gracie was saying. It's being, you know, it's knowing that you're slap dab in the middle of God's will for your life. You know, it's the fulfillment, knowing this is what God wants you to do. And then you get to get up and do it every day. I think that's the main part of it. And then it's the results of, seeing the Lord work in people's lives, seeing God, save people, seeing God change people's lives, seeing God work in people. And the most satisfying parts as a pastor are things that the church only sees how it grows in people, you know. Mm-hmm. But because I get to talk with individuals and we talk back and forth, I get to see growth in their lives. That's probably the most satisfying part of it.
Okay. Now I'm going to flip it.
Yeah.
What's the worst thing about being a pastor?
The worst part about being a pastor is the fishbowl life, if you know what I mean. You know, you live in that fishbowl and everybody walks by and, you know, taps on the glass, you know, to see if you're breathing in there. And they look in your life, you know, they always examine, you know, your life. You know, like Leslie said just a little bit ago, people see you in a different role when they're like, hey, there's an expectation in that person's life. And so some of that's difficult. It's not so much hard on me, but it's hard on your family because the family has to, you know, nobody's critiquing maybe what I'm wearing or where I'm going or what I'm doing, but they will with your children and your wife or your your family in general. And so that's probably the hardest thing to get used to.
Right. And I imagine your phone probably never stops ringing.
It never stops ringing.
Never.
Gracie, never. You do something every year when y'all go on vacation. I love it. You go on Facebook.
He gets so mad at me when I do it.
And you're like, please, y'all leave him alone for a couple weeks while we're right in Florida on vacation.
He's finally getting to the point, and it helps a lot that we have Dusty Brackett to help everything while we're gone. He'll go out on the beach all day. The only thing he'll take on the beach is, you know, his chair and then his, like, Kindle.
Right.
He keeps his phone at home because, you know, if it's an emergency, they'll contact Dusty.
Right.
So he can just have that time.
Well, it takes time to train or groom a church of our size. Well, how many people we average on Sunday?
Right now, post COVID, it's about 520.
Okay.
Pre COVID, about 650, somewhere in that way, 640. Yep.
So you're trying to train a congregation of 600 people,
and then oh sure.
And then how many viewers on Facebook Live?
Well, this past week, I guess Sundays is like 2,400 views from okay this past Sunday. Yeah.
And so you're just trying to train all these people,
right,
of, hey,
sure,
listen, I got to unplug. I got to go on vacation.
Yeah, Gracie's always tried to help me with that. So.
And it takes it takes things like what Gracie did.
Right.
Yeah.
Stop. Leave us alone. Let us just be a normal family.
Because it goes from things like, hey, Pastor, I broke my pinky finger. Can you please come see me at the hospital? And I'm like, no, he's on vacation.
Pastor, the grass needs to be cut.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Right.
Right. So many things. Right. Small things, big things, you know.
All right. Another question. How many children do you and Lynn have? We know you have one because you got Gracie sitting here.
We got four kids. We've got our oldest daughter is Shelby. She's married and has has one of my grand dudes. Then we've got
grand dudes. What are you gonna call the new baby?
She's my dudette. Okay. Yeah, she's my dudette. And then my son Wes, he's married and he has my other grand dude with a dudette on the way. So, and then I've got Andy, which is younger than Gracie. Okay. He's 19, just graduated, I guess, this past May. And, yeah, he's still at home. I got him at home. Gracie's at home. The other two are married and out in the, doing their life.
Nice.
You're 21 now?
Mm-hmm.
When are you going to get out?
Soon. Hey, hoping to get married next year. But we won't talk about that.
No, we won't.
We can.
No, we can't.
Okay. He'll cry.
He'll be crying.
He'll cry.
Now, given the fact that Gracie's sitting here, we have to tune her out for just a moment.
Sure.
Who's your favorite?
Well, Dugan, I don't have a favorite. No parent has a favorite. We all love our children equally, and we love our grandchildren more than we do our children. So it's kind of that's the way
we'll
it works.
The
but for some reason, they the don't best. Believe that.
But no, they don't.
No,
they don't.
Having a favorite.
Everybody says Gracie's my favorite. That's what all my kids would say.
See, my guess would have been Andy.
Mm-hmm. No, Andy's probably mom's favorite. That's probably how that goes.
That's the baby favorite. Boy. Yeah,
that's right, the baby yeah. boy. You know.
And then Wes. Wes is mom's next favorite for sure.
Yeah.
Which one's easier to raise, boys or girls?
Man, I think boys are easier to raise. Mm-hmm. Boys are, you know, they're kind of low maintenance, I don't know. It's now I'm speaking from a man's point of view. My wife may disagree with me totally, but I would say the boys are easier to raise. But I prefer the girls. I love, you know, it's just something about a daughter and a dad that's just special. They're expensive. They're
high they are expensive.
but there's just something about a daughter and a dad. I kind of feel like it's that way with boys and the moms too. There's just something special there too. But yeah, I think for me the boys are a little bit easier to raise than girls because you know I'm not a girl. It's hard to understand. You know, it's not. You know, I don't understand.
We
all
don't
the time
have
what's
boys,
going on.
But I've always thought that boys would be easier to raise
yeah.
than girls.
I agree. I think they are.
In our situation, we have two girls, and the girls go to you about everything. Everything.
Right. They don't come to like me at you. All.
They don't like me.
Well, my girl, it's the opposite. It's opposite at home.
That's why I was getting ready to ask.
Yeah, at home it's opposite. The girls come to me. You know, they don't. They kind of they scoot around mom and come
really?
To me and say,
"Oh yeah,
oh yeah." They always.
Is it because you know dad's going to say yes?
Yeah, for the most part, but he's always had, I think, the older I get, mom does have a lot, like, I could talk to her about, but growing up, if I got in trouble, I'm terrified to go to him, but he is the first person I'm going to, yeah. or if I'm going through something, he's the first person that I'm going to.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't
he's
know
just
why.
Got that, like, comfort about him, and he's always told us, you know, always come to me if you need me, always come to me if you need anything at all, so we've always just kind of...
Maybe he needs to teach you a trick or two.
Maybe so. I think if you're friendly, it helps, Leslie. If you're
yeah,
nice,
he's not
friendly.
Very friendly.
I think that's the key.
Hardcore, friendly. Old school, all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
Y'all no done? Compassion, empathy.
Yeah, you got to have all those.
No,
yeah,
I can go on for days.
She sounds like she's got a list
I
over
am.
There.
I don't deny it. I am old school.
Right.
But I'm trying to get better at it. I really am.
You know, are working harder. You yeah. are working harder.
I listen. Matt has actually counseled us a couple times.
He has.
Sure.
And he was quick to point out, Dugan, you got to let up a little bit.
Well, he hadn't let up a whole lot.
Oh, right, right. Of course not.
Oh,
baby steps.
Yeah, that's right.
Baby steps.
I asked our last guest on here. This question, so I'm going to ask you.
Sure.
You and Lynn, joint banking accounts or separate?
Oh, no. We're in the same basket.
Now, I'm going to ask the question, is Gracie also part of that joint checking account?
Well, she's not a part of the joint checking account. She has what they call a student account, which is attached to my account. So I can
okay.
move money into her account and she
or
can
take move, money
or
out.
Take money
either
out. Whatever, you know, whatever needs to happen.
Gotcha. Okay. Let's see here. And all of your, how long have you been married?
27 years.
27. Okay.
28 this May, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
In all of your years being married, what was your toughest moment?
Toughest moment?
And
with,
don't cry.
No, I won't, but without that. I can't say I won't, but without a doubt, our toughest moment was when my son, Wes, was diagnosed with his brain tumor. And we went through all that stuff. It was tough.
How old was he?
He was 12.
So, Gracie, how old were you? And don't you cry either,
Gracie? Like, probably
she's
7 or 8, I think.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you remember a lot about that time?
Yeah, I remember everything, but I say lucky for me, but I actually spent the night at my friend's house that night. I think it was like a Friday or a Saturday morning.
Saturday morning, yeah.
Yeah, so I spent the night at my childhood best friend's house, and it was normal for me to be over there like all weekend, all week. And so I remember my Aunt Sissy, or Elizabeth, she called my friend's mom and was like, hey, Gracie needs to come home. And didn't tell me why. So, you know me, I'm just like, I don't want to go over there. Why is she making me leave? And then when I went over there, we kind of figured it out. But she's always, we were pretty close with her growing up. Mm-hmm. So she was very calm and just like,
you stayed real with, collected. You stayed with her while we were at the
yeah,
hospital.
So we stayed with her while and obviously, mom and dad were gone.
And obviously Wes is survived. He's
yep, doing
to
well. Had brain surgery, tumor removed, doing well. Everything's great. No.
How long was that process?
It was a while. We found out I was getting up on, it was a Saturday morning, I was getting ready to go on visitation with Brother Ben. Mm-hmm. And
were you a pastor then?
No, I was a police officer. Yep. And he had a seizure, and in my other, he ended up in my daughter's room somehow. I guess he was disoriented, that kind of thing. And mm-hmm. and so it was a Saturday. So I took him to the we took him to the hospital, and that's when they found out that he had a brain tumor. And then it was a long process. Went to Piedmont, then went from Piedmont to mm-hmm. Levine's. We were in Levine's for quite a while, and they they went through it, and they set a schedule of when they would do the surgery to try to remove it. They did a lot of checking to make sure that it was removable because of where it was at, and but their biggest concern obviously was it cancer. That was the biggest problem, and there was no way to really know that until they did the surgery. And so probably I'd say all in all was the from the time we that Saturday morning until the time he had the surgery, probably a 6 month period. Mm-hmm. And then from there it was kind of a little bit of recovery from the surgery's kind of hard on him, and he's such a young fella, and but went through that. And then we went through after the surgery, we got the news that it was not cancer to look at it, so they didn't think it was. But then the biopsies come back, it wasn't. And so then we had to spend a couple of years doing CAT scans every 6 months to make sure it wouldn't grow back, those types of thing. And he was on seizure medicine for 3 or 4 years. And then, you know, it came a time where we'd been about 5 years out. They'd been doing scans every 6 months, or MRIs every 6 months. They took him off his medication and cleared him, and he hadn't had any problems. So, praise the Lord. We're super excited. But it was difficult from a family dynamic
That's what I was going to ask. Know, it was just, how hard was it on you and Lynn as a married couple and the kids? Like,
I'll tell you how hard it was, and I'll give you the credit. I'll give the credit to my wife, because I've always been, I mean, you know, my kids could cut their arm off and I'm the guy with the bandage and the tourniquet, and, you know, it just doesn't, you know, it's just what I do, and no worries, no, I'm just going to take care of this, we're going to fix it, you know. And at that time I was preaching, like Gracie said, I was policing, but I was on an admin schedule, and I was preaching, I think that year I'd preach like 50 out of 52 weekends somewhere, just preaching all over. And so, you know, when this happened though, to be just be honest, it just devastated me. My wife was the strength that really pulled us through that, because she stayed level-headed all the way through it. She was calm all the way through it. Man, I'm telling you, I'm not lying to you, Dugan. I was questioning life. I'll tell you this. I don't know who'll be listening to this. Maybe somebody needs to hear it. But Gracie remembers I went to Columbia to preach, and I was sitting waiting to preach, had a panic attack, and had to go to the hospital. I thought I was having a heart attack. That's how stressed I was.
Did it set you back from pushing forward with wanting to become a pastor and going through your training and stuff like that?
It actually led me to Liberty. I had a church, this church in Columbia wanted me to candidate and take the church, and I'd already said I would, and I'd already preached there before, and I'd come back to preach again. And they were ready to vote on me when this happened. And when this happened, I came down later and preached, and they put the vote off. And anyway, during that, I had that panic attack when I was in the hospital. It just devastated me. I was so stressed. I can't even tell you. But the Lord brought me through it. My wife really helped us. But as a result of that, this church named Liberty said, hey, we know you've got this going on, but we don't have a pastor. Could you fill in sometime when you get a chance? And that's how I ended up coming to Liberty. So the Lord wrought good out of the situation. But Lynn drugged me through that through that time, because I was messed up. It really bothered me.
Because we're stronger than men.
Oh, no doubt. I've seen childbirth 4 times. There's no doubt women are stronger than men. There's no doubt. But really, she was the rock in that whole event.
What's your favorite moment?
In our marriage? Mm-hmm. I think my favorite moment in our marriage, and this is going to sound whatever, cheesy, was several years ago. Me and Lynn celebrated 25 years, and we went to, it was 24 years, I think. It was 24 years. We went to L.A., and we went out to the West Coast, and we rented a convertible, and we rode up, you know, what is that, number one, up through Malibu, all the way up, just out, me and her in a convertible.
Did you mess your hair up?
It did, yeah. It did. But you know, four grown kids. We got married young, 18 and 17. Lived in an efficiency apartment.
Hold up, right there. Let's stop there for just a second.
Sure.
I want to make sure people pay attention to what you just said. You got married young.
Oh, super young. Yeah.
What age?
I was 18. She was 17.
What would you say if 3 years ago? Well, 4 years ago, Gracie would have come home and said, "Dad, I'm getting married."
Yeah, I'd have run that guy off with a ball bat.
Better yet, me being 21 and having 2 kids. Is that how many you had when you were 21?
Yeah, something like that.
2 kids and married.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, so we got married young. So here we are now, 24 years later. Kids are grown. They're doing awesome. Super excited about life. And we're celebrating our anniversary there, riding around, just two of us.
Do I drive up to the mountain to see the Hollywood sign?
Oh yeah, all that stuff. Yeah, we did all that. We were the tourists. You know,
it was kind of like a glimpse of retirement and riding off into the sunset.
It was. Yeah, it was. It was like when we got married. Her parents, my parents, everybody we knew. Nobody thought these dudes are going to get married, be together 25 years, have 4 kids, grandkids, and still be married in ministry doing. It was like if they make it 6 months, you know, we'd be shocked. And so. For us to be out there, it was just kind of that moment of, hey, not that you ever make it in life, but, you know, it's like, hey.
We made it.
It takes work.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Yeah. Yeah,
it's one of the hardest things there is.
It's probably the hardest thing.
And you know how hard it is for me not to kill her every day?
I know how hard it is for her not to kill you, probably.
Well, thank you.
Same thing.
But, yeah, that's my favorite.
Okay, good. Gracie, what's your favorite memory about your parents?
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, I just put you on the spot.
I know. Sorry. I don't know. There's a lot. I don't technically have, like, a favorite memory, but one of my favorite things that we do is every year for Thanksgiving, we go to Lake Lure.
Yeah.
And we just kind of hang out. We don't really do anything, like, too much, but we'll go, like, shopping and, like, you know, seeing all the mountains and the rivers and stuff. So that's probably one of my favorite times. I can't really...
It's an awesome time.
Think of like a favorite moment.
It looks like a good time because I see you put the pictures on Facebook.
Yeah.
And I'm
it's really good. Fun doing little stuff. Like right now, I guess my favorite thing, every Sunday night, we do movie night. And it's me, Tucker, Mom, and Dad. We get food. We pick out
Who's
a movie.
Tucker?
My boyfriend.
Let's talk about Tucker for a second.
Oh, gosh.
We just led into that. Tucker, a serious boyfriend?
Yeah, we've been dating for almost 3 years.
Now, I gave him kind of a nickname. I call him Michael Phelps because he's a swimmer, right?
Uh-huh. Retired swimmer.
Retired?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. What was that like? Hey, Dad, I'm dating this guy named Tucker.
It's always weird at first because
Tucker older than you?
Yes, he's 25.
Okay.
Yeah, so me and Tucker just started out kind of like as friends, and that, I think, is what helped a lot. You know, we were really good friends. Well, then when we started, like, hanging out, that's always weird because you're just like, hey, Dad, oh, me and my friend. Mm-hmm. And he knows it's like, that's not a friend.
Right.
Yeah, I'm not stupid.
No, we're not.
Yeah, we can read right through y'all.
We know this stuff.
It's very nerve-wracking.
Because we did it.
Right. Well, see, Tucker knew he made it into the family when he got invited to Thanksgiving in Lake Lure. You're right. That's right. Yeah, yeah. That's how you kind of, that's the gauge. You know what I mean when I say,
where'd you make him sleep at?
Oh, no. We got him down in the basement on the couch. So wherever we can.
Did you screw Gracie's door shut?
Oh, yeah. Listen.
Oh, he gives you the talk for sure. He's like, listen, if you even get thirsty in the middle of the night, you better not get up to get any water.
Right.
I will kill people.
Yeah, he's everywhere.
And I know, and you.
And I was a police officer. I think I can get away with it.
And I know a guy with 14 acres and a pond.
Yeah, absolutely.
We will bury you on Rambo Road.
Yes.
The real question is, what does Dad think about Tucker?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that.
Well, the fact that he's around after 3 years tells you I like him, or I would have run him off by now. No, he's a good kid. I really like him. Of course, I call him a kid 25, you know, but when you get a certain age, you know.
Everybody's
a kid, you know, but he's a great guy. He's good to the family. And you know, one of the things when you have a future in-law, one of the character, I guess, deciders of a person.
Quantifiers.
Yeah, thank you for a big word. Is the way they interact with the family. You know, he really just fits in, and he just fits in with us. He not only fits in with me and Lynn and Gracie, of course, but Andy loves him. Wes loves him, you know.
Now, in the beginning,
they all enjoy him, and so that makes it, you know, you can tell.
In the beginning, when Gracie first started bringing him back, did you ever, like, did he, like, not talk to you, and it kind of made you feel like he didn't like you, or?
No, one of the things about him, I think, that I always have liked about Tucker is he talks to me like a man would talk to another man. Always respectful, always kind, always friendly. But he'll, you know, when he comes in, he's, hey, Mr., you know, back in the day, hey, Mr. Burrell, how are you? You know, he was always friendly. He spoke well, and that goes a long way with me.
Yeah.
As far as the way to interact.
They both love football, too, so they always have something to talk about.
That's true.
Yep. He's a Dolphins fan as well.
No, he's not. He's a Panthers fan.
Oh. Well, you're both losers.
That's true. we both got a long year ahead of us.
I can't say anything.
Yeah.
Gracie, have you ever taken a boy home to meet Matt, and Matt run him off?
I'm not going to mention any names.
No. Don't name names.
I did date this one guy on and off in high school, and he came walking into my house and had earrings, and my dad was like, oh, don't really like. Now, that's the type of person where it's like they don't really speak to you. They just don't blend well with your family.
I would say it wasn't just the earrings about him.
No. There
pretty
was
pretty much everything about him.
There was a lot of other things that he didn't like about him, but that was one of the biggest. And then another big thing, too, was when he would come to church with me, Dad was like, the earrings, he didn't really like them because, you know, none of my brothers had earrings. Dad never had earrings. So he was like, I would like if he didn't wear them. And then he was like, well, I don't care. He was like, I don't really care. You know, I'm going to wear them if I want to. Right. And looking back, I was dumb. And it's like, you know, when that happened, that's when I kind of realized, like, my dad is my favorite person in this world. If you don't care what he thinks, then I don't care what you think.
Right.
So then after that, I was like, I'm going to date somebody that's more like my dad, somebody that's normal, nicer, and can have a conversation with you.
Right.
So, yes, I have had
we've had a couple multiple of times we've had to say, this is not working
and he's
out.
Been very honest about it, too. He's not rude about it. He's just like, yeah, I don't like him. You're not going to speak to him anymore.
We're done with that.
Yeah. But you need that. You need that. If you have a 16-year-old daughter, they need to hear that in their life.
Because they don't have the life experience you have. You know, they
don't. We have this conversation all the time with Shelby.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yesterday. Honey, I'm 42.
Right.
You're 18.
Right.
And I got a lot more experience at this than you do.
I think the key is you've got to get them to trust you in every aspect of their life, or they know that you have their best interest. And then when you have to come to them and be like, hey, you know, I just don't think this is the dude or the girl. If they don't, you know, they had to buy in a long time ago, I guess, to really hear you. Now, they still don't like that you don't like them, because, you know, nobody would. I wouldn't like it if my dad told me they didn't like who I was dating either. But, we've had those conversations.
Well, you just think it's like, okay, well, you're an old person. Like, you don't know what you're talking about.
That's
it wasn't like that for you.
Sure.
But then when you get to a certain age, it's like, oh, I mean,
they were right
about things.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. We all, everybody looks back at their parents and goes, you know, they were smarter than I thought they were.
Yes.
We all do that.
All right. So as Matt said, we're going to move on. Matt, as I mentioned earlier, you have counseled Leslie and I before a couple times.
Sure.
I'm going to ask you a couple questions here.
Mm-hmm.
What percentage of marriages today actually last?
Well, the statistics tell us that there's two problems. One, 50% of all marriages end in divorce. That's the national percentage in America. The even more disturbing statistic today is that less and less people consider marriage important. So they don't, they not only do they separate after they begin a relationship, but they don't even really get married in the first place. So it's marriage is on the divorce is on the upswing and marriage is on the decline. I know that sounds kind of crazy, but it really is. Yeah.
And what does the Bible say about divorce?
Well, the Bible says divorce, well, the first thing the Bible says, of course, is that's God's intention for every man or woman, the person they marry, that they marry them for life. You know, it's supposed to be a committed, lifelong relationship. The Bible does give, it does give provision for divorce. Adultery is one that it gives provision for. Of course, abuse and some of those things as well. But God is always for reconciling a marriage if possible. And if someone's life's not, you know, of course, abuse and those types of things. Of course, God doesn't want that in a relationship either.
Well, we've seen and heard in the past where people will say, well, the Bible says you're not supposed to get divorced. So, you know, he beats me or she beats me, whatever, and I need to stay there. And in my opinion, that
that's not the case. And that, and I always like to make that specific statement, is that although God is for marriage,
God's not going to be for you beating your wife.
Absolutely, he is not for that. And I warn and on both sides, if you're in an abusive relationship, I don't care if you're dating or married, you need to get out of that abusive relationship. That God,
and not necessarily just physical, but also
Yes, if it's controlling, emotional, physical abuse.
You need to stop controlling me.
Oh, my Lord.
Hey, the good news is when you counseled us, you didn't tell us to get a divorce.
Right, that's right. That's exactly right. But you must get out of that. That God is not for that in any way. It's not right. It's not what he intends. Right. It's not what he wants. And God is not for, he's for marriage, but he is not for abuse. He's not for any of those things.
Right. Let's see here. Raising children in today's society versus when we were kids. So,
sure.
Let's kind of break this down. I like the fact that Grace is here for this because she's obviously growing up in a different time than we did.
Right.
You know, we grew up, I was born in the 70s.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Grew up in the 80s and the 90s. I'm one of those, I still listen to 90s music.
Right.
But back then we didn't have cell phones.
Right.
We didn't have social media.
Didn't have internet. Most people may or may not have had cable.
Straight. We didn't have cable.
When we were kids, we called it cable, but now it's DirecTV, Spectrum.
I remember
many
years to watch the four channels that would come through clear.
Sure. My parents' remote control was me.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You tap me on the head and tell me to go turn the knob.
Absolutely.
On the big center console floor model that weighed 800 pounds.
We remember, Dugan, I mean, I feel like we do, when VCRs came out and movie rental stores were all the rage. I mean, I remember my parents renting a VCR so that we could watch a movie on a VHS.
Do you remember the huge satellites that come out?
Oh, yes.
I'm talking about the huge, where it was two buttons and you'd go to like G3.
The whole thing would
52. And I remember that.
Sure.
I remember when that came out, it was, my dad got it.
Yeah.
I thought we were high class.
Oh, man, yeah. So kids today, let's go back. I bet me and you can remember the original in-home Atari 2600 coming out. Mm-hmm. Before that, you couldn't play a game unless you went to the arcade or, had a pocket full of quarters.
Right.
Yeah. So children today have all of those things that we just mentioned.
Right.
TV, movies, internet, social media, games, in a cell phone in their pocket.
So with that being said,
yeah,
at what age did you start allowing your children to have cell phones?
Well, it's funny. I was thinking about that because you give me a little cheat sheet there. I was thinking about
I've never given anybody a cheat sheet.
Sorry. I was thinking about that because my daughter Shelby, of course, is the oldest daughter. Mm-hmm. Cell phones hadn't been out that long, when she got her first cell phone. And she was probably the oldest child because most people that may be listening can remember when you first got cell phones, those plans were expensive. I mean, they were, you get 500 minutes and, they were high. So I think she was about 12 when she got her first. Do you remember, Gracie? Was she 12?
I think she was older.
Or she may have been 13?
Yeah, she was in probably like 8th grade.
Yeah, she may have been, yeah. And then, of course, Wes got his probably the next year, so about the same age for him. Gracie's probably the youngest one that got a cell phone.
Fifth grade.
Maybe because her mom yeah. wanted her to have it. Holy, I think that was the real case.
The first friend, but you know, it's just like a little phone. I had my dad's number, my mom's, my.
There's no data on it at that time.
No. You could just text and call.
All you could do was text and call. Right. Yeah.
And you can't text anybody because your dad had to confirm who you
right.
were.
Right. Right. The one thing that I've.
The thing I do to Sydney Ray right now.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
I think the difference is. 12. I think when you get a cell phone, I don't know that when a child gets a cell phone matters as much as how the parents manage the cell phone. I think that's. The biggest thing. My kids know this, and Gracie was talking about because I preached about this not too long ago. I would check a brother's cell phone in a heartbeat. Yeah. I mean, I would just walk up and say, "Hand me your phone," without notice. I mean, I didn't want it with notice. I wanted to be able to scroll through everything you had without giving you any notice.
We would be going to dinner one night, or just going somewhere, and you know, we'll be singing to the radio. Gracie, hand me your phone. When can I get it back? When I give it back to you, yeah. It could be 2 weeks, it could be right now, right. or it could yeah. be after I go through it. It just yeah. depends. He yeah. just we knew that he could get our phone anytime he wanted to.
Yeah, I wanted it to always feel like, I don't think your kids, my kids, anybody's kids go out and do stupid things on purpose. You know
not
what I mean? I don't think, you're right. I don't think that none of us are planning on being dumb. And honestly, if you ask most men, hey, did you get up this morning and go, hey, I'm going to look at porn, or right. hey, I'm going to go cheat on my wife, or hey, I'm going to go begin an inappropriate relationship. Nobody says, oh yeah, I've been planning that for weeks. Nobody. Right. It's in that moment of weakness when you make a bad decision. And so my thought process was always, if they know dad's app to just say, hey, give me your phone,
then they're,
it would limit how often that would occur. Not saying it eliminates all of it, but just saying that it, you know, it cuts some of that out.
Not only that, but me as a 15-year-old girl, I'm probably talking to these guys that I have no business talking
right.
to. Mm-hmm. Now that I think about it, I will definitely go through my kids' phones sure. when they get phones. I'm terrified for that day to ever come.
I have parents at the church come to me a lot. We talked to somebody not too long ago whose young child, they took their phone from them, but they had a school iPad. And they took the phone away not because, they took it away for a real reason. I mean, mm-hmm. the child had done something and, you know, it was like, hey.
That was phone. Their punishment.
That's your punishment, right. Well, they took their school iPad and downloaded Instagram on it. And of course, used Messenger, you know, used the inbox on Instagram. And the conversations that some of these guys were hitting her up with was just like, I mean, you know how guys are. We know how they are. Especially
now, when you say guys, you mean like older guys or
too old
people
to be,
their age?
Too old to be talking to them, but still, I guess,
legally
okay to talk to them. But the asking for pictures and things, that is just, it's. And I'm afraid that sometimes young people are so naive. They don't know how people and how the world really is. You know, the big talk today is sex trafficking. We know that mm-hmm. that's like a huge issue, but it starts so many times on social media because you're a 14-year-old girl or guy, and somebody who says they're so and so and they're a certain age, you don't know who they mm-hmm. are. You've never met them, but you're too naive to know that there's some grown person sitting somewhere who's planning to entrap you, and that's happening all the time. And so I think it's important for parents to know how to use the social media that their children have and know how to use the phone they have. And if you don't, at least get training to get that so you can kind of check up on it. Yeah.
Now Gracie, you're 21, all right? So you're not that old. You've had social media for how long?
Probably since like eighth grade.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You ever had a stalker?
Not that I know of. I mean, I've had some pretty like creepy people like message me and stuff, but I've always, you know, dad's always put it in your head, like at a young age, he's not trying to like make you paranoid, but he kind of is. It's like, I don't want you to be paranoid about everything, but you can't trust people that you don't know. Mm-hmm. But I mean, honestly, like even now, like I'll have, you know, I'm 21, but when I was like 16, even just working at like Bilo and stuff, I would have 50-year-old men that would invite me to come hang out with them, and then like just crazy stuff. And especially like on Facebook, they'll message you, and it's just little things that like, you know, a normal person shouldn't say things to
right.
you like that.
They're working
so
in a direction. Social media is dangerous.
It's horrible.
It's a great.
It's the devil.
Well, it's a great.
You talk about it on your sermons all the time.
Yeah, it's got a lot of great uses, but it's also got it's really, you know, we think about this, Dugan. Social media invites the world into your personal life. I mean, that's really what it does. I mean, when you open an account on any of the social media platforms, you're inviting an unlimited number of people that you have no idea who they are into your life. Mm-hmm. And probably most of them are, you know, not ill-willed, but there is danger, and it's important to keep an eye on those things. And I think
it's
as parents,
very dangerous, and it's hard for parents like us with a 12-year-old
right.
to try to get her to understand
sure.
how dangerous it is, because
right.
children her age, that 12 to
yeah.
say 14, 15 years old, they look for that social acceptance, and that social acceptance comes from
sure.
social media.
It comes from likes, it comes from, you
comments,
know,
comments,
shares.
Comments,
likes,
and shares, yeah.
swipes.
And the problem you have too with a 12-year-old, and we know this, is they live in the world where nobody gets hurt, where, you know, everybody's good people, where mm-hmm. that, you know, when we were 12, what we were really worried about, you know, what we're going to eat for supper. I mean, you know,
we were eating dirt.
Yeah, right. Yeah. you live in an oblivious world when you're 12, 13, 14. You haven't figured out that there are bad people with bad intentions right. in the world. You haven't figured that out in your life.
Gracie, do you think you could have grown up back in the time when we did? To hear
I don't
us,
know.
To
Dad
hear
always...
us tell stories?
I don't know. Probably not, because I'm kind of naive. Like, anytime we watch, like, documentaries on, like, Ted Bundy and stuff, Dad's like, oh, you would have been dead. Like, you would.
You ever used a payphone?
No. I don't think
that
so.
That really makes me
Do you
me
know
feel
what
old.
It is?
Yeah, I know what it is.
Okay.
How about
a pager?
They don't even exist anymore.
How about a beeper? A pager?
I know what those are, just because I think you used to have one or something.
Police department. I had to wear one, yeah.
Yeah, but I wouldn't know how to use it. I mean, I've always had a phone, like,
yeah.
I don't
so
know
was
what
your
it's
first
like to not have
cell
one.
Phone, like a smartphone, or
no, it was just
no,
like
it was, yeah.
we called it a Raspberry because it looked like a BlackBerry, but it didn't have a little ball. It was just a button, but it was pink.
Yeah, you remember the Blackberries, yeah. or, you know, and hers was this little square, but it was like a pink looking. So we called it a Raspberry.
That's probably what I'm going to get my kid, because you can't really delete anything
right.
off of it. Mm-hmm. You can't have anything yeah. on it, but text and call, and that's all you need.
When you're young, it's super, yes, you know, because you're young, but she, yeah. you know, and don't get me wrong, I think there's value in cell phones. You know, when your child's in 4,200 activities, it's great to be able to say, hey, look over here, I'm sitting in the parking lot.
Right.
Or
I mean,
now
I'm in the line, get
right.
in the car. You know,
now
it's,
you
yeah.
can track them. I've had,
it's great, yeah.
my parents have tracked my cell phone since the app came out.
Well, see, we still have, you know, Gracie on our tracking, and it's great to know, just like we're fixing to eat, how far is she away? You know, it's great. But when she was younger, you know, it's the whole, you know, just kind of know where they are and, you know, what they're doing. And
well, it's a safety issue.
Safety
issue.
Oh,
yeah.
You get your driver's license.
Sure.
I'm on my way home. Okay, well, if it's taking too long to get home,
right.
you want to see where they are and why they got held up.
And it tells you if they're speeding or not.
It does.
Life 360 does.
That's what we have. I don't mind it. I think I hated it when I was younger. Now, I kind of do my own thing as is, but I work every day. But it's like, if I were to get in a car wreck, or if somebody were to try to kidnap me, like, they
sure,
would
be
able
to
see where I'm at.
Yeah.
So I think it's really helpful.
I can track Shelby on my phone, but I can't track Sydney Ray because of the Just for Kids Verizon app that's on her phone. It won't pair with mine, so I can't. But she's with me 24/7
right,
anyway,
yeah,
so
yeah.
it doesn't matter.
I know that feeling.
But I like her having a phone in middle school, because just like you said,
yeah.
like yesterday, I couldn't get off work in time to get her picked up, so
mm-hmm.
I had to call my sister at the last minute, hey, I need you to go grab Cindy Ray from school.
Right.
I can easily text Cindy
That's
Ray
right.
and say,
yeah.
I'm not coming,
sure.
but look for Aunt Catherine.
Yeah,
but yeah,
it's
I was
great.
Always doing sports when I was younger. And
plus, we don't have to pay for those high house phones we used to have. Things were expensive. Had to buy the long distance
package.
Yeah,
I sell those things for
that.
A living now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well,
okay.
All right,
sorry.
You know how much
waiting.
They are? $20.
That's crazy.
For a business
isn't it?
Line.
Isn't that
now.
Crazy?
Yep. We haven't had a house phone in years. Probably 10 years.
I don't know anybody with an actual house phone.
I remember paying, I mean, I may be wrong, but I think we were paying $60 a month. That was house phone. And then we had an additional MCI long distance plan that, you know, was
Do you remember what they called the party phone? And
no,
I just learned what that was called the other day.
The party line? No,
party
I never
line.
Lived in that. No, but my parents had a party line.
Right.
Yeah.
Where you pick up the phone to talk.
Somebody else is talking.
And somebody 2 hours away would be having a phone conversation.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, crazy. That's something I'm learning with the new career.
Yeah.
You talked about the driving home and tracking. what type of curfew did you give the kids growing up? What ages? Did it vary by age?
Yeah, it varied by age, and it also varied by where they were at. You know, let's just say that, you know, if Grace was on a church event with the youth, I didn't really care what time they got back, you know, because I knew they had the proper supervision. Me and you were close enough, Dugan. If I knew they were with your family, I really wouldn't, it wouldn't really matter to me, because I know you guys not going to let anything happen over there that I wouldn't want to happen. The only time the curfew bothers me is when they're off with people that are more their age and it's just them.
Right.
And so I would give them a curfew.
At the cookout, hanging out.
If they're
Gracie, let me tell you, I was
at the cookout.
Yes, I was never at a bonfire at 1 a.m.
Never.
Okay.
And it's like, Dad, I just want to hang out with friends. No, you have no business being out at 1 a.m.
Nothing good happens after midnight.
And let me tell you something, Leslie. They never got me on either. Where are you going tonight? Well, I'm going to go over to Bill's house. Who's Bill? Well, you know Bill. And I'm like, no. I don't think I know Bill. And they're like, well, you know Bill so and so's parents. And I'm like, I know who they are. But I don't know them. You know, it'd be like
your
saying,
friends on Facebook.
You're right. If they didn't know them, you weren't going over there. I mean, I need
definitely
to
not
know.
Spending the night.
Huh?
So definitely not spending the night if you didn't know
them. No. But kids will try to get you, oh, you know them. And you're like, no, I don't think I know them. And so, yeah.
Just because you've heard him say their name a time or two doesn't mean that they know.
That's exactly right.
My curfew was 11 o'clock until I graduated high school.
Yeah.
Now, I did have one question listed on here, and I think this is a perfect time to ask, since we talked about, Gracie, how you're 21, you still live at home. What time is a good time for children to move out?
Yeah, I don't know, man. Well, you know, what I've done with my kids, of course, is I want them to move out when they're able and ready to move out. And I want them, there's no reason, like with Gracie, she's 21. Gracie comes and goes like an adult. Like, she's a roommate, really. Does that make sense?
All right, yeah. So, all right, great. Great way to describe it.
Sure.
At what point did you allow her to do that?
Right. Well, it's, of course, obviously, after she graduates high school, we allow her more freedom, you know, because you kind of slipped into the adult state. She went to 2 years of York Tech, you know, and she went to college for 2 years. So she's earning, I guess, my trust the whole time, because, you know, she's doing all the things she's supposed to do. You know, by the time she's 20, you know, I just felt like, hey, she just does what she's supposed to do when she's supposed to do it. She's always where she's supposed to be, making good decisions that I haven't even had to, you know, like I haven't even had to say, hey, you need to be home, because she's already home because she's got to work in the morning, you know, that kind of thing. And so I guess it's a natural progression. Did the same thing with Wes, and Shelby got married fairly young, but we did the same thing with her as well. You let them kind of branch and get that freedom, and, you know, there's a time where they do it. And the only thing I tell them is, hey, if you're coming in late, don't wake me up, because I got to get up in the morning, and I'm getting old, you know.
I'm going to, honey, you got anything you want to ask?
I just want to ask, now that she is 21, I'm assuming you work full time, whatever. You pay rent?
Mm-mm. I pay my car payment.
Okay. That's your car payment. Here's why I do that.
And my gas.
Yeah.
Who pays your insurance?
The big man over here does.
Well, this is why I do that. I tell Wes this, I told Shelby this, I told her this. As long as you live at my house, here's what happens. A 20-year-old kid will move out, rent an apartment, spend $10,000.
Get in debt,
and then get married and move into a house with their wife or spouse or husband. I've told them, and it's a joke, there's a running joke we always say, I always tell Andy, what if I said, I know a way you can make $10,000. You can have $10,000. He said, okay, tell it to me. Work, live here, save money, you'll have
$10,000. It's that
simple. Yeah, you're not really going to be restricted here, you know. You come in, you got a bedroom, a bathroom, you can
as
rifle
long as
through
you're the, respectful and take
yeah
care
oh yeah
of things.
Sure yeah yeah rifle through the kitchen, get anything you want to eat, you know. It's a great deal.
Just
we got
don't touch
going
my
here.
Oreos
that's
or
right
my coffee.
That's right, yeah. You got a great deal here, and just save your money so that when you get married, you know, you're already in a better position than you are going and renting that apartment, putting that deposit down, turning those power and lights on. Because the truth is, how often are you really home when you're that age? You know what I mean? You're not even, it's not like
you're not
hanging out at the house.
You're not.
You're with your friends, or you're going and eating at your dad and mom's because you're hungry.
I'll ask her all the time. I'll come home, I'm like, where's Shelby?
Yeah, like, they're not home. Gracie, you know, when she's home, she comes home, she sleeps.
And you know, she maybe eat occasionally.
Yeah, she's been home since her boyfriend went off to school. But
sure, but what I'm saying is, if she was renting this house that she lived in, she'd be getting ripped because she doesn't really do nothing but sleep there. So
where's the fine line between like doing that and then moving out? Like, all right, time for you to get out.
Well, I don't think there is a time. I think you've raised your kids right. You're steering them into a direction of a life, a career, a family. I think it'll be a natural progression. You know, I'm not really worried about Gracie still being here when she's 40.
What if Andy turns 35 and he's still living at home?
He won't.
Andy's ready to move out. He's ready to.
Yeah, he's ready. Yeah, they'll.
Really? Because I could see him wanting to stick around as long as he can.
He talks a big game. Yeah, when I move out, this, that, and I'm like, yeah, you can't even take you can't even take the trash outside in the dark. I don't want to hear all that stuff. So I tell him.
Let's see here. Are you for spanking children, or do you think spanking should not take place?
He is for it, let me tell you. Okay.
Hey, Gracie, I wasn't talking to you. No, I'm just playing.
I was going to say, how many times have you heard him in a Sunday morning preaching where he wants to kill his kids?
Right. I tell people, I'm not saying everybody should, and I'm not saying it's for everybody, but in our position, I always felt like, if you started that when they were very young, you know, and I'm not talking about beating a child by no means, you know, you pop that 2-year-old in a diaper and they don't even feel it. All they do is hear the sound. Mm-hmm. As they get older, you don't have to do that stuff. No, you know.
Most of the time, it's the thought of it scares them more than the actual.
Absolutely. Yep.
And you know, I remember thinking as a kid growing up, I got my butt beat.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to sugarcoat it.
No,
I got hit with frying pans, hickory switches,
me
brooms.
Too.
Everything.
Which is why now you believe in corporal punishment, and you got to get the belt and snap it a few times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, but I remember my dad telling me, this is going to hurt me more than it hurts you. And I'm thinking, you lie.
That's right. Yeah.
You lie. Now, it does.
It does.
I mean,
it does.
And I've learned to, don't look at me like that.
You have no remorse whatsoever pop that belt. No, you don't.
Yes, I do. I don't, but before I was quick to, in that moment of anger, I'd grab the belt.
Sure.
Now it's like, okay, take a step back.
Right.
Let's breathe.
Sure.
Let's talk to them about what they did wrong. Tell them what they could have done differently. Then if I'm going to pop them with the belt,
right.
it's not going to be as bad.
It's a better. I think children need discipline. I think a child will turn out worse with no discipline than they will with discipline.
Look at some of the stuff that's going on today.
Yeah, I think discipline steers everyone. I mean, you know, we all grew up this way, you know, and we were taught, you know.
Leslie didn't get her butt beat.
Oh, she didn't? She was that child.
That's why she's the way she is.
That would explain.
One time, I was 16 years old, and my mama cornered me in the kitchen and beat me to death. I lied to her, but I'm 43 and ain't lied to her since.
See, it's a self-correcting problem.
Yeah. But no, I didn't get spanked.
Yeah.
Right.
I didn't have to. My daddy spoke.
And you were, and that's how it went at home.
And
that's what I was going to say. I think some children.
Sometimes you just got to give that look.
Like, yeah, and lots of children are different.
You.
Lots of children are different. I mean, I've got one child that it was everything in my power to raise them, and then it was one child that all I do is talk to them, and it's just you have different personalities, and it's mm-hmm. and it really depends on the child.
Well, it's like Sydney Ray. I will tell her something,
mm-hmm.
and she wants to argue with me.
Yeah,
and she'll do it to her.
Right.
I come in the other day into the kitchen, and her and Sydney Ray were going at it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was over. She told her no, she couldn't do something, and it was why?
Yeah, right.
And what I'm trying to teach her right now is, honey, when we tell you no, we don't have to tell you why.
Right, that's right.
You just take the answer no and move on.
Gracie, are you familiar with those
yes.
words? Yeah, okay.
But with Sydney Ray, after about the fifth time, I get loud.
Right, yeah.
I'm like, stop, listen to me.
Sure.
And then she gets to crying and she gets all upset because
she's very sensitive.
Oh, see, Dad wouldn't even be, like, he wouldn't yell at me. He would just be talking to me and I would just be bawling my eyes out. And he would always say, why are you crying? I was like, because you're yelling at me. And he's like, no, I'm not.
I even raise my voice.
I'll tell Sydney Ray, honey, I have to yell. The only way I can get you to shut up and listen.
Yeah. Well, she's just like you.
We've all been right there, all of us.
So I put a post out on Facebook today asking people for a couple questions that maybe they wanted me to ask you. So these are going to be a little touchy.
Okay.
What if, now, granted the fact that you're a pastor.
Right.
We all go to church. We're Christians.
Sure.
And Christians are criticized for, you think it's got to be this way,
right,
blah, blah, blah.
Right.
how would you handle it if one of your children come home and said they were gay?
Yeah, you know, I get that question, and I get two sides of that question. Some people come to me, and they'll be just irate that their child is gay, you know, and they'll have that response of, I'm just going to turn them out, turn them away, I'm not going to have anything to do with them. And then you have the other people that are like, well, I'm going to accept them and love them, you know. And I know in my position as a pastor, according to the Word of God, of course, we believe that it's sin to be gay. We believe it's wrong. With that being said, they're still my child. I still would love them. I'd still mm-hmm. be a part of their life. I would still support them. And I guess the real, you would just have to agree to disagree with mm-hmm. your children. I mean, that's the only response you have, because mm-hmm. God would not turn his back on someone. And so I can't do the same thing. So, yeah.
Well, the Bible teaches you to love like Christ.
That's right.
And mirror his image.
Yes, absolutely.
And he's going to love them regardless.
That's right.
So.
He always loved those in sin. He loved those in poverty. He loved those having a difficult time. And I feel like you have to do the same thing.
Oh, I can't turn it off. There we go.
All right. That's our timer, so we got to wrap it up because we've been going for about an hour. The next to last question I have for you is, someone wanted to ask me, are you for or against abortion?
Yeah, I'm against abortion, obviously. Scripture, I think, is very clear that God is the giver of life. And if we take life, we take God's most precious gift, which is life. And I know that people will always say, but what about rape? What about, you know, and I know there are terrible circumstances, don't get me wrong, but I want to encourage anybody that's listening to this, if you were in that position, just consider that there are folks out there who are not able to have children. Mm-hmm. They would love to adopt your
right.
children. You would not only be given that child the gift of life, but you would be giving that parent, that family, mm-hmm. the gift of a child. And so I just want to encourage anybody, and I know you may be financially not able, you may be in it may be a horrible situation that made this happen, but please give that child a chance and give that family a chance. They'd
well, God makes no mistakes. And
he does not.
He creates every life for a reason.
Every life is special.
No matter how it's created.
Absolutely.
Last thing I got for you is best advice you can give people when it comes to marriage and raising children, since that's what this podcast is supposed to be about.
I don't know if we said this before or during the podcast, but I think it goes back to what we're talking about. It's work. It is work, work, work. And you have, just like when you get up and go to work every day for a career that's 25 years long, and there's days you want to go to work, and there's days you don't want to go to work, and there's times you feel like working, and there's times you don't feel like working. Marriage and parenting is the same way. There are days it's awesome. There's, like I was telling you, in California, right around my wife, awesome day. But there's a lot of days where it's not awesome, and it's work. You have got to decide that, you know, when I feel like it, I'm going to be a good husband or a wife. And if I don't feel like it, I'm going to still be a good husband or wife. Same way with parenting. It's work. You just have to be consistent and be persistent at being married and being a parent. I mean, there's no substitution for hard work.
There's not.
Yeah.
Gracie, any parting words of advice? You're 21.
I don't think so. I think he wrapped it up pretty well.
Okay. Leslie, you got anything?
Nope, I'm good. Just thanks to Two Tall Media Group for letting us be a part of the family and record. And
yep.
Thanks, Matt and Gracie,
absolutely.
For being here.
Thanks for having us on.
Yeah.
We really enjoyed it.
And thanks for bringing that up. We want to also, it's not just us. We are a podcast family. We are part of Two Tall Media Group, and some of the other podcasts that we want you to check out is I've Heard Worse from Better. Same trailer, different park.
And our newest one with Tony Breeden.
Tony Breeden.
Breaking Bars.
Breaking Bars. He's a Rock Hill City police officer, and he is...
I actually listened to one of his podcasts. Did you share one on Facebook from him?
I did.
Yeah, yep. I listened to that. I don't know, the other night. I can't, well...
You know, he's doing something on his that I got chills. And mm-hmm. that is, he takes the flag with him everywhere he goes.
They do the Pledge of Allegiance. I remember that when they started the podcast off, and it was good. I enjoyed it.
I'm
First time I've heard that podcast, but I really enjoyed it. Yeah,
I was getting ready to take a shower this morning. I turned it on, and him and Joey Deese, his pastor.
That's who I was listening to, him and Joey. Yeah,
and they started, and I stopped what I was doing and put my hand over my heart and said the Pledge of Allegiance.
It's great, wasn't it?
Standing in the shower.
No, I was standing outside of the shower, naked. Gracie, plug you.
That's a scary thought.
I had to stop what I was doing. And put my hand over my heart.
It's great though, isn't it?
Yeah, it was the first time I said the Pledge of Allegiance, and I couldn't tell you the last time.
Right, I know.
So
that's pretty awesome.
But that is a great podcast, and Pastor Joy Deese is an awesome preacher doing an awesome work right here in Rock Hill too.
Yep. So thank y'all for coming on. We really enjoyed it. We hope all the listeners enjoyed it. We tried to make it as interesting and good content as possible, and we look forward to the next one. And I look forward to Sunday morning.
Yes, sir. Thank
you. And I'll be there again.
All right. Hey, I'm excited.
Thanks, y'all.
Thanks.